This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents Iron Flame by Rebecca Yarros. Narrated by Rebecca Soler with Teddy Hamilton. To my fellow zebras, not all strength is physical. Iron Flame is a non-stop, thrilling adventure fantasy set in the brutal and competitive world of a military college for dragon riders, which includes elements regarding war, psychological and physical torture, imprisonment, intense violence, brutal injuries, perilous situations, blood, dismemberment, burning, murder, death, animal death, graphic language, loss of family, grief, and sexual activities that are shown on the page. Readers who may be sensitive to these elements, please take note and prepare to join the revolution. The following text has been faithfully transcribed from Navarian into the modern language by Jacinia Neal Wart, curator of the Scribe Quadrant at Basgaiath War College. All events are true, and names have been preserved to honor the courage of those fallen. May their souls be commended to Malik. Part 1. An excerpt from Public Notice 628.85, transcribed by Sorella Neal Wart. In this, the 628th year of our unification, it is hereby recorded that Aracia has been burned by dragon in accordance with the treaty ending the separatist movement. Those who fled, survived, and those who did not remain entombed in her ruins. Chapter 1. Revolution tastes oddly sweet. I stare at my older brother across a scarred wooden table in the enormous busy kitchen of the Fortress of Aracia and chew the honeyed biscuit he put on my plate.
Damn, that's good. Really good.
Maybe it's just that I haven't eaten in 3 days. Since a not-so-mythological being stabbed me in the side with a poisoned blade that should have killed me. It would have killed me if it hadn't been for Brennan, who won't stop smiling as I chew. This might go down as the most surreal experience of my life. Brennan is alive. Venin, dark wielders I'd thought only existed in fables, are real. Brennan is alive. Aracia still stands, even though it was scorched after the Tirish Rebellion 6 years ago. Brennan is alive. I have a new 3-inch scar on my abdomen, but I didn't die. Brennan is alive.
The biscuits are good, right?
He asks, snagging one from the platter between us.
Kind of remind me of the ones that cook used to make when we were stationed in Caldir, remember?
I stare and chew. He's just so him. And yet he looks different from what I remember. His brownish-red curls are cropped close to his skull instead of waving over his forehead. And there's no lingering softness in the angles of his face, which now has tiny lines at the edges of his eyes. But that smile, those eyes, it's really him. And his one condition being me eating something before he takes me to my dragons? It's the most Brennan move ever. Not that Tarn ever waits for permission, which means,
I too think you need to eat something.
Tarn's low, arrogant voice fills my head.
Yeah, yeah,
I reply in kind, mentally reaching out for Endarna again as one of the kitchen workers hurries by, offering a quick smile to Brennan. There's no response from Endarna, but I can feel the shimmering bond between us, though it's no longer golden like her scales. I can't quite get a mental picture, but my brain is still a little groggy. She's sleeping again, which isn't odd after she uses up all her energy to stop time, and after what happened in Resin, she probably needs to sleep for the next week or so.
You've barely said a word, you know, Brennan tilts his head just like he used to when he was trying to solve a problem. It's kind of creepy.
Watching me eat is creepy,
I counter after I swallow, my voice still a little hoarse. And? He shrugs shamelessly, a dimple flashing in his cheek when he grins. It's the only boyish thing left about him.
A few days ago, I was pretty sure I'd never get to watch you do, well, anything again.
He takes a huge bite. Guess his appetite is still the same, which is oddly comforting. You're welcome, by the way, for the mending. Consider it a 21st birthday present.
Thank you.
That's right. I slept right through my birthday, and I'm sure my lying in bed on the brink of death was more than enough drama for everyone in this castle. House. Whatever it's called. Zayden's cousin Bodhi strides into the kitchen dressed in uniform, his arm in a sling and his cloud of black curls freshly trimmed.
Lieutenant Colonel Acerai, Bodhi says, handing a folded missive to Brennan. This just came in from Besgaeth. The writer will be here until tonight if you want to reply.
He offers me a smile, and I'm struck again at how closely he resembles a softer version of Zayden. With a nod to my brother, he turns and leaves.
Besgaeth? Another rider here? How many are there? Exactly how big is this revolution?
Questions fire off in my head faster than I can find my tongue.
Wait, you're a lieutenant colonel? And who is Acerai, I ask.
Yeah, because that is the most important inquiry to make.
I had to change my last name for obvious reasons.
He glances at me and unfolds the missive, breaking a blue wax seal.
And you'd be amazed at how fast you get promoted when everyone above you continues to die, he says, then reads the letter and curses, shoving it into his pocket.
I have to go meet with the assembly now, but finish your biscuits and I'll meet you in the hall in half an hour and take you to your dragons. All traces of the dimple, of the laughing older brother, are gone, and in their place is a man I barely recognize. An officer I don't know.
Brennan may as well be a stranger.
Without waiting for me to respond, he scrapes his chair back and strides out of the kitchen. Sipping my milk, I stare at the empty space my brother left across from me, chair still pulled out from the table as though he might return at any moment. I swallow the remaining biscuits stuck in the back of my throat and lift my chin, determined not to ever sit and wait on my brother to return again. I push up from the table and head after him, out of the kitchen and down the long hall. He must have been in a hurry because I can't see him anywhere. The intricate carpet muffles my footsteps along the wide, high-arched hallway as I come to, whoa. The sweeping, polished double staircases with their detailed banisters rise four more floors above me. I'd been too focused on my brother to pay attention earlier, but now I blatantly gawk at the architecture of the enormous space. Each landing is slightly offset from the one below, as though the staircase climbs toward the very mountain this fortress is carved into. The morning light streams in from dozens of small windows that provide the only decoration on the five-story wall above the massive double doors of the fortress's entrance. They seem to form a pattern, but I'm too close to see the whole of it. There's no perspective, which pretty much feels like a metaphor for my entire life right now. Two guards watch every step I take, but make no move to stop me when I pass by. At least that means I'm not a prisoner. I continue to stride through the main hall of the house, eventually picking up the sound of voices from a room across the way, where one of two large ornate doors is pitched open. As I approach, I immediately recognize Brennan's voice, and my chest tightens at the familiar timbre.
That's not going to work, Brennan's deep voice echoes. Next suggestion.
I make it through the massive foyer, ignoring what look to be two other wings off to the left and right. This place is astounding. Half palace, half home, but entirely a fortress. The thick stone walls are what saved it from its supposed demise 6 years ago. From what I've read, Ryerson House has never been breached by any army, even during the three sieges that I know of.
Stone doesn't burn. That's what Zayden told me.
The city, now reduced to a town, has been silently, covertly rebuilding for years right under General Melgren's nose. The relics, magical marks the children of the executed rebellion officers carry, somehow mask them from Melgren's signet when they're in groups of three or more. He can't see the outcome of any battle they're present for, so he's never been able to see them organizing to fight here. There are certain aspects of Ryerson House, from its defensible position carved into the mountainside to its cobblestone floors and steel-enforced double doors in the entryway, that remind me of Bezgaev, the war college I've called home since my mother was stationed there as its commanding general. But that's where the similarities end. There's actual art on the walls here, not just busts of war heroes displayed on stands. And I'm pretty sure that's an authentic Pahromish tapestry hanging across the hall from where Bodhi and Imogen stand in the open doorway. Imogen puts her finger to her lips, then motions at me to join in the empty place between her and Bodhi. I take it, noticing Imogen's half-shaved hair has been recently dyed a brighter pink while I've been resting. Clearly, she's comfortable here. Bodhi, too. The only signs that either has been in a battle are the sling cradling Bodhi's fractured arm and a split in Imogen's lip.
Someone has to state the obvious,
an older man with an eye patch and a hawkish nose says from the far end of a table that consumes the length of the two-story room. Tufts of thinning gray hair frame the deep lines in his lightly tanned, weathered skin, his jowls hanging down like a wildebeest. He leans back in his chair, placing a thick hand on his rounded belly. The table could easily accommodate 30 people, but only 5 sit along one side, all dressed in rider black, perched slightly ahead of the door, at an angle where they'd have to turn fully to see us, which they don't. Brennan paces in front of the table, but not at an angle he can easily spot us either. My heart lurches into my throat, and I realize it's going to take some time to get used to seeing Brennan alive. He's somehow exactly the same as I remember, and yet different. But here he is, living, breathing, currently glaring at a map of the continent on the long wall, the map size only rivaled by the one in the battle brief lecture hall at Bezgaev. And standing in front of that map, one arm leaning against a massive chair as he stares down the table at its occupants, is Zayden. He looks good, even with bruises marring the tawny brown skin under his eyes from lack of sleep. The high slopes of his cheeks, the dark eyes that usually soften whenever they meet mine, the scar that bisects his brow and ends beneath his eye, the swirling, shimmering relic that ends at his jaw, and the carved lines of the mouth I know as well as my own all add up to make him physically fucking perfect to me. And that's just his face. His body? Somehow even better. And the way he uses it when he has me in his arms? Nope. I shake my head and cut off my thoughts right there. Zayden may be gorgeous and powerful and terrifyingly lethal, which shouldn't be the turn-on it is, but I can't trust him to tell me the truth about, well, anything. Which really hurts, considering how pathetically in love with him I am. And what is the obvious thing you need to state, Major Ferris? Zayden asks, his tone completely, utterly bored.
It's an assembly meeting, Bodhi whispers to me. Only a quorum of 5 is required to call a vote, since all 7 are almost never here at one time and 4 votes carry a motion.
I file that information away.
Are we allowed to listen?
Meetings are open to whoever wants to attend, Imogen replies just as quietly.
And we're attending in the hallway? I ask.
Yes, Imogen answers with no other explanation.
Returning is the only option, Hawknose continues. Not doing so risks everything we're building here. Search patrols will come, and we don't have enough riders.
It's a little hard to recruit while trying to stay undetectable. a petite woman with glossy black hair like a raven counters, the umber skin at the corners of her eyes crinkling as she glares down the table at the older man.
Let's not get off topic, Trissa, Brennan says, rubbing the bridge of his nose.
Our father's nose. Their resemblance is uncanny.
No point increasing our numbers without a working forge to arm them with weapons.
Hawknose's voice rises above the others.
We're still short a luminary if you haven't noticed.
And where are we in negotiations with Viscount Takaris for his?
A large man asks in a calm, rumbling voice, his ebony hand tugging at his thick silver beard.
Viscount Takaris? That isn't a noble family in any Navarian records. We don't even have Viscounts in our aristocracy.
Still working on a diplomatic solution, Brennan answers.
There's no solution. Takaris isn't over the insult you delivered last summer.
An older woman built like a battle axe locks her gaze on Zayden, her blonde hair brushing just past her square alabaster chin.
I told you the Viscount was never going to give it to us in the first place, Zayden replies. The man only collects things. He does not trade them.
Well, he's definitely not going to trade with us now, she retorts, her gaze narrowing. Especially if you won't even contemplate his latest offer.
He can fuck right off with his offer.
Zayden's voice is calm, but his eyes have a hard edge that dares anyone at the table to disagree. As if showing these people they aren't worth his time, he steps around the arm of the massive chair facing them and settles into it, stretching his long legs and resting his arms on the velvet armrests, like he doesn't have a care in the world. The quiet that falls on the room is telling. Zayden commands as much respect from the assembly of this revolution as he does at Bezgaeth. I don't recognize any of the other riders besides Brennan, but I'd bet Zayden is the most powerful in the room given their silence.
For now,
Taryn reminds me with the arrogance only 100 years of being one of the most formidable battle dragons on the continent can provide.
Instruct the humans to bring you up to the valley once the politics are finished.
There had better be a solution. If we can't supply the drifts with enough weaponry to really fight in the next year, the tide will shift too far to ever hope of holding the Ven in advance at bay,
Silverbeard notes.
This all will have been for nothing.
My stomach pitches. A year? We're that close to losing a war I knew nothing about a few days ago?
As I said, I'm working on a diplomatic solution for the Luminary, Brennan's tone sharpens. And we're so wildly off topic, I'm not sure this is the same meeting.
I vote we take Bezgaeth's Luminary,
Battle Axe suggests.
If we're that close to losing this war, there's no other option.
Zayden shoots Brennan a look that I can't decipher. And I breathe deeply as it hits me. He probably knows my own brother better than I do. And he kept him from me. Of all the secrets he hid, that's the one I can't quite swallow.
And what would you have done with the knowledge had he shared it?
Taryn asks. Stop bringing logic into an emotional argument. I fold my arms across my chest. It's my heart that won't fully let my head forgive Zayden.
We've been over that, Brennan says with finality. If we take Bezgaeth's forging device, Navarre can't replenish their stores at the outposts. Countless civilians will die if those wards fall. Do any of you want to be responsible for that?
Silence reigns.
Then we agree, Hawknose says. Until we can supply the drifts, the cadets have to return.
Oh, they're talking about us, I whisper. That's why we're standing out of their direct sight. Bodhi nods.
You're uncharacteristically quiet, Suri,
Brennan notes, glancing at the wide-shouldered brunette with olive skin and a single streak of silver in her hair, her nose twitching like a fox sitting next to him. I say, we send all but the two. Her nonchalance skates a chill down my spine as she drums her bony fingers on the table, a giant emerald ring catching the light. Six cadets can lie as well as eight.
Eight.
Zayden, Garrick, Bodhi, Imogen. Three marked ones I'd never gotten a chance to know before we were thrown into battle. And me.
Nausea rises like a tide.
The war games. We're supposed to be finishing the last competition of the year between the wings of the Riders' Quadrant at Besgaeth, and instead we enter deadly battle with an enemy I'd thought were only folklore last week. And now we're... well, we're here in a city that isn't supposed to exist.
But not all of us.
My throat tightens and I blink back the burn in my eyes. Soleil and Liam didn't survive.
Liam.
Blonde hair and sky blue eyes fill my memory, and pain erupts behind my ribs. His boisterous laugh, his quick smile, his loyalty and kindness. It's all gone.
He's gone.
All because he promised Zayden he'd guard me.
None of the eight are expendable, Suri.
Silverbeard leans on the back two legs of his chair and examines the map behind Zayden.
What do you propose, Felix?
Suri counters.
Running our own war college with all our spare time? Most of them haven't finished their education. They're of no use to us yet. As if any of you has a say in if we return,
Zayden interrupts, earning everyone's attention.
We will take the advice of the assembly, but it will be taken as only that, advice.
We cannot afford to risk your life, Suri argues.
My life is equal to any of theirs, Zayden gestures toward us.
Brennan's gaze meets mine, then widens. Each head in the room turns toward us, and I fight the instinct to retreat as almost every set of eyes narrows on me.
Who do they see? Lilith's daughter or Brennan's sister?
I lift my chin because I'm both, and I feel like neither.
Not every life, Suri says as she looks straight at me.
Ouch.
How could you have stood there and let her overhear the conversation of the assembly?
If you didn't want her to hear, you should have closed the door. Bodhi responds, stepping into the room.
She cannot be trusted.
Anger might color her cheeks, but that's fear in Suri's eyes.
Zayden has already taken responsibility for her.
Imogen sidesteps, moving slightly closer to me.
As brutal of a custom as it may be.
My gaze whips to meet Zayden's. What the hell is she talking about?
I still don't understand that particular decision,
Hawknose adds.
Decision was simple. She's worth a dozen of me, Zayden says, and my breath catches at the intensity in his eyes.
If I didn't know better, I'd think he means it.
And I'm not talking about her signet. I would have told her everything discussed here anyway, so an open door is a moot point.
A spark of hope flares to life in my chest. Maybe he really is done keeping secrets.
She's General Sorengale's daughter, Battleaxe points out, frustration clear in her voice. And I'm the general's son, Brennan argues. And you've more than proven your loyalty over the last 6 years, Battleaxe shouts. She hasn't.
Anger heats my neck, flushing up to my face. They're talking about me like I'm not even here.
She fought at our side at Resen.
Bodhi tenses as his voice rises as well.
She should be confined.
Suri's face turns downright ruddy as she pushes away from the table and stands.
her gaze jumping to the silver half of my hair that forms my coronet braid. She can ruin us all with what she knows.
Agreed.
Hawknose joins her with palpable loathing aimed in my direction.
She's too dangerous not to keep prisoner.
The muscles of my stomach tense, but I mask my expression like I've seen Zayden do countless times and leave my hands at my sides, close to my sheathed daggers. My body might be frail, my joints undependable, but my aim with a knife is lethally accurate. There's no fucking way I'm going to let them cage me here. I scan each of the assembly members, assessing which is the biggest threat. Brennan rises to his full height. Knowing that she's bonded to Tarn, whose bond gets deeper with each rider, and whose previous bond was already so strong that Naolin's death nearly killed him, knowing we fear he'll die if she does now, that because of that, Ryerson's life is tied to hers? He nods toward Zayden. Disappointment tastes bitter on my tongue. Is that all I am to him? Zayden's weakness?
I alone am responsible for Violet.
Zayden's voice lowers in pure malice.
And if I'm not enough, there are not one but two dragons who have already vouched for her integrity.
Enough is enough. She is standing right here, I snap, and an unflattering amount of satisfaction courses through me at the number of jaws that drop in front of me. So stop talking about me and try talking to me. A corner of Zayden's mouth rises, and the pride that flashes through his expression is unmistakable. What do you want from me? I ask them, striding into the room. Want me to walk parapet and prove my bravery? Done. Want me to betray my kingdom by defending Peromish citizens? Done. Want me to keep his secrets? I gesture toward Zayden with my left hand. Done. I kept every secret.
Except the one that mattered.
Suri lifts an eyebrow. We all know how you ended up in Athbeen. Guilt clogs my throat.
That was not, Zayden starts, rising from his chair. Through no fault of her own.
The man nearest us with the gray beard, Felix, stands, blocking Suri from my sight as he turns toward her.
No first year could withstand a memory reader, especially one considered a friend.
He pivots to face me.
But you have to know that you have enemies at Besgaeth now. Should you return, you must know that Atos will not be among your friends. He will do everything he can to kill you for what you've seen.
I know. The words are thick on my tongue. Felix nods.
We are done here, Zayden says, his gaze catching and holding Suri's and then Hawk Nose's, their shoulders drooping in defeat.
I'll expect an update on Zolia in the morning, Brennan says. Consider this assembly meeting adjourned.
The council members push in their chairs and file past the three of us once we step out of the way. Imogen and Bodhi stay at my sides. Eventually, Zayden starts to walk out but pauses in front of me.
We'll head up to the valley. Meet us when you're done.
I'll go with you now.
This is the last place on the continent I want to be left behind. Stay and talk to your brother, he says quietly. Who knows when you'll get another chance?
I glance past Bodhi to see Brennan standing in the middle of the room, waiting for me. Brennan, who always took the time to help wrap my knees when I was a child. Brennan, who wrote the book that helped me through my first year. Brennan, who I've missed for 6 years.
Go,
Zayden urges. We won't leave without you, and we're not going to let the assembly dictate what we do. The eight of us will decide what to do together. He gives me a long look that makes my traitorous heart clench, and then he walks away. Bodhi and Imogen follow. Which leaves me to turn toward my brother, armed with 6 years of questions.
An excerpt from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind. It is the valley above Ryerson House, heated by natural thermal energy. That is its greatest asset. For there lie the original hatching grounds of the Dubmadine line, for which two of the greatest dragons of our time, Coda and Tairn, descend. Chapter 2. I shut the tall door behind me before moving toward Brennan. This meeting is definitely not open to the public. Did you eat enough? He rests on the edge of the table like he used to when we were kids. The move is so him, and as for the question, I ignore it entirely. So this is where you've been the last 6 years? My voice threatens to break. I'm so glad he's alive. That's all that should matter, but I can't forget the years he's let me grieve for him either. Yes, his shoulders drop. I'm sorry I let you believe I was dead. It was the only way. Cue awkward silence. What am I supposed to say to that? It's all right, but not really? There's so much I want to say to him, so much I need to ask, but suddenly the years we've been apart feel defining. Neither of us is the same person. You look different, he smiles, but it's sad. Not in a bad way, just different. I was 14 the last time you saw me. I grimace. I think I'm still the same height. I used to hope I'd get a last-minute growth spurt, but alas, here I am. Here you are, he nods slowly. I always pictured you in scribe colors, but you look good in black. Gods, he sighs. The relief I felt when I heard you'd survived threshing is indescribable. You knew? My eyes flare. He has sources at Bezgaeth. I knew. And then Ryerson showed up with you stabbed and dying. He looks away and clears his throat, then takes a deep breath before continuing. I'm so damn glad you're healed, that you've made it through your first year. The relief in his eyes takes some of the sting out of my anger. Mira helped. That's putting it mildly. The armor? He guesses correctly. There's something to be said for the delicate weight of my dragon scale armor under my flight leathers. I nod. She had it made. She gave me your book, too, the one you wrote for her. I hope it was useful. I think back to the naive, sheltered girl who crossed the parapet, and everything she survived in the crucible of her first year to forge me into the woman I am now. It was. His smile falters, and he glances out the window. How is Mira? Speaking from experience, I'm sure she'd be a lot better if she knew you're alive. There's no point mincing words if we only have a short time. He flinches. Guess I deserve that. And I guess that answers that question. Mira doesn't know, but she should. How exactly are you alive, Brennan? I shift my weight to one leg, crossing my arms. Where is Marb? What are you doing here? Why didn't you come home? One at a time. He holds up his hands like he's under attack, and I glimpse a rune-shaped scar on his palm before he grips the edge of the table. Naolin. His jaw flexes. Tairn's previous rider, I suggest slowly, wondering if he was more than that to Brennan. He was the siphon who died trying to save you, according to Professor Kaori. My heart sinks. I'm sorry your rider died saving my brother. We will no longer speak of the one who came before. Tairn's voice is rough. A corner of Brennan's mouth lifts. I miss Kaori. He's a good man. He sighs, lifting his head to hold my gaze. Naolin didn't fail, but it cost him everything. I woke up on a cliffside not far from here. Marb had been wounded, but he was alive too, and the other dragons? His amber-colored eyes meet mine. There are other dragons here, and they saved us. hid us in the network of caves within the valley, then later with the civilians who survived the city being scorched. My brow furrows as I try to make sense of his words. Where is Marb now? He's been in the valley with the others for days, keeping watch on your Andarna with Tarn, Sigale, and, since you woke up, Ryerson. That's where Zayden has been, guarding Andarna? That makes me a little less pissed that he's blatantly avoided me. And why are you here, Brennan? He shrugs as though his answer is obvious. I'm here for the same reason you fought at Resson. Because I can't stand by, safe behind the barriers of Navarre's wards, and watch innocent people die at the hands of dark wielders because our leadership is too selfish to help. That's also the reason I didn't come home. I couldn't fly for Navarre knowing what we've done, what we're doing. And I sure as hell couldn't look our mother in the eye and listen to her justify our cowardice. I refused to live the lie. You just left Mira and me to live it. It comes out a little angrier than I intend, or maybe I'm angrier than I realize. A choice I've questioned every single day since. The regret in his eyes is enough to make me breathe deeply and center myself. I figured you had Dad. Until we didn't. My throat threatens to tighten, so I turn to look at the map, then walk closer to take in more of the details. Unlike the one at Besgaeth, which is updated daily with griffin attacks on the border, this one reflects the truths Navarre is hiding. The region of the Barrens, the dry, desert-covered peninsula in the southeast that all dragonkind abandoned after General Daramor ruined the land during the Great War, is completely painted in crimson. The stain stretches into Breivik, over the Dunas River. What have to be newer battle sites are marked with an alarming number of bright red and orange flags. The red ones mar not only the oceanic eastern border of the Crovlin province along the Bay of Malek, but are heavily concentrated north into the plains as well, spreading like a disease, even infecting dots of Signesen. But the orange ones, those are heavily concentrated along the Stonewater River, which leads straight to Navarre's border. So the fables are all true. Venin coming out of the barrens, sucking the land dry of magic, moving city to city. You've seen it with your own eyes. He moves to my side. And the wyvern? We've known about them for a few months, but none of the cadets did. Until now, we've limited what Ryerson and the others have known for their own safety. Which, in retrospect, may have been a mistake. We know they have at least two breeds, one that produces blue fire and a faster one that breeds green fire. How many? I ask him. Where are they making them? Do you mean hatching them? Making, I repeat. Don't you remember the fables Dad used to read to us? They said wyvern are created by venin. They channel power into wyvern. I think that's why riderless ones died when I killed their dark wielders. Their source of power was gone. You remember all of that from Dad reading? He glances at me, bewildered. I still have the book. It's a good thing Zayden warded my room at Besgaeth so no one will discover it while we're here. Are you telling me you not only didn't know they're created but have no clue where they're coming from? That's accurate. How comforting. I mutter as electricity prickles my skin. I shake my hands, pacing in front of the large map. The orange flags are awfully close to Zolia, the second most populous city in Breivik, and where Cliffsbane, their flyer academy, is located. The one with the silver beard said we have a year to turn it around? Felix. He's the most rational of the assembly, but personally, I think he's wrong. Brennan waves his hand in the air in a general outline of Breivik's border with the barrens along the Dunas River. The red flags are all from the last few years, and the orange are the last few months. At the rate they've been expanding, not only in their numbers of wyvern, but in territory, I think they're headed straight up the Stonewater River, and we have 6 months or less until they're strong enough to come for Navar. Not that the Assembly will listen. 6 months. I swallow the bile fighting to rise in my throat. Brennan was always a brilliant strategist, according to our mother. My bet is on his assessment. The general pattern is moving northwest toward Navar. Resin is the exception, along with whatever that flag is. I point to the one that looks to be an hour's flight east of Resin. The desiccated landscape around what had been a thriving trading post flashes in my memory. Those flags are more than outliers. They're twin splotches of orange in an otherwise untouched area. We think the iron box Garrick Tavis found at Resin is some kind of lure, but we had to destroy it before we could fully investigate. A box like it was found in Jana, already smashed. He glances my way, but the craftsmanship is Navarian. I absorb that information with a long breath, wondering what reason Navar would have to build lures besides using one to kill us in Resin. You really think they'll come for Navar before taking the rest of Poromiel? Why not take the easier targets first? I do. Their survival depends on it as much as ours depends on stopping them. The energy in the hatching grounds at Bezgaeth could keep them fed for decades. And yet Melgarin thinks the wards are so infallible that he won't alert the population.
Or he's afraid that telling the public will make them realize we aren't entirely the good guys.
Not anymore. Fen's rebellion taught leadership. It's a lot easier to control happy civilians than disgruntled, or worse, terrified ones.
And yet they manage to keep the truth hidden, I whisper. Sometime in our past, one generation of Navarians wiped the history books, erasing the existence of Venon from common education and knowledge, all because we aren't willing to risk our own safety by providing the one material that can kill dark wielders, the same alloy that powers the farthest reaches of our wards.
Yeah, well, Dad always tried to tell us. Brennan's voice softens. In a world of dragon riders, griffin flyers, and dark wielders, it's the scribes who hold all the power. They put out the public announcements. They keep the records. They write our history. Do you think Dad knew? The idea of him structuring my entire existence around facts and knowledge only to withhold the most important of it is unfathomable. I choose to believe he didn't. Brennan offers me a sad smile. Word will get out the closer those forces come to the border. They can't keep the truth hidden. Someone will see. Someone has to see. Yes, and our revolution has to be ready when they do. The second the secret is out, there's no reason to keep the Marked Ones under supervision of leadership, and we'll lose access to Bezgaeth's forge. There's that word again. Revolution.
You think you can win?
What makes you say that? He turns toward me.
You call it a revolution, not a rebellion. I lift my brow. Tirish isn't the only thing Dad taught us both. You think you can win. Unlike Fen Ryerson.
We have to win, or we're dead. All of us. Navar thinks they're safe behind the wards, but what happens if the wards fail? If they're not as powerful as leadership thinks they are? They're already extended to their max, not to mention the people living outside the wards. One way or another, we're outmatched, Vi. We've never seen them organize behind a leader like they did at Resin. And Garrick told us that one got away. The sage, I shudder, wrapping my arms around my middle. That's what the one who stabbed me called him. I think he was her teacher.
They're teaching each other? Like they've set up some sort of school for Venon? Fucking great.
He shakes his head.
And you're not behind the wards, I note. Not here.
The protective magical shield provided by the dragon's hatching grounds in the Vale falls short of the official mountainous borders of Navar, and the entire southwestern coastline of Tirindor, including Aracia, is exposed. a fact that never quite mattered when we thought griffins were the only danger out there since they're incapable of flying high enough to summit the cliffs.
Not here,
he agrees, though funnily enough, Arasha has a dormant wardstone. At least, I think that's what it is. I was never let close enough to Basgaiath's to compare the two in any detail.
My eyebrows rise.
A second wardstone? I thought only one was created during the unification.
Yeah, and I thought Venon were a myth and dragons were the only key to powering wards,
he shrugs. But the art of creating new wards is a lost magic anyway, so it's basically a glorified statue. Pretty to look at, though.
You have a wardstone, I murmur, my thoughts spinning. They wouldn't need as many weapons if they had wards. If they could generate their own protection, maybe they could weave extensions into Poromiel, like we've expanded our wards to their max. Maybe we could keep at least some of our neighbors safe.
A useless one. What we need is that goddamn luminary that intensifies dragonfire hot enough to smelt alloy into the only weapons capable of defeating Venon. That's our only shot.
But what if the wardstone isn't useless?
My heart races. We'd only ever been told there was one wardstone in existence. Its boundaries stretched as far as possible. But if there's another? Just because no one knows how to create new wards today doesn't mean the knowledge can't exist somewhere. Like in the archives. That's information we wouldn't have wiped. We would have protected it at all costs, just in case.
Violet, whatever you're thinking, don't.
He rubs his thumb along his chin, which has always been his nervous tell. Amazing the things I'm remembering about him. Consider the archives enemy territory. Weapons are the only thing that can win this war.
But you don't have a working forge or enough riders to defend yourself if Navarre realizes what you're up to.
Panic crawls up my spine like a spider.
And you think you're going to win this war with a bunch of daggers?
You make it sound like we're doomed. We're not. A muscle ticks in his jaw.
The first Separatist rebellion was crushed in under a year. And up until a few days ago, I thought it took you too.
He doesn't get it. He can't. He didn't bury his family.
I've already watched your things burn once.
Vi. He hesitates for a second, then wraps his arms around me and pulls me into a hug, rocking slightly like I'm a kid again. We learned from Fenn's mistakes. We're not attacking Navarre like he did or declaring independence. We're fighting right under their noses, and we have a plan. Something killed off the Venon 600 years ago during the Great War, and we're actively searching for that weapon. Forging the daggers will keep us in the fight long enough to find it, as long as we can get that luminary. We might not be ready now, but we will be once Navarre catches on.
His tone isn't exactly convincing. I take a step back.
With what army? How many of you are there in this revolution? How many will die this time?
It's best if you don't know specifics. He tenses, then reaches for me again. I've already put you in danger by telling you too much. At least until you can shield Atos out.
My chest constricts, and I sidestep from his embrace.
You sound like Zayden.
I can't help the bitterness that leaches into my tone. Turns out, falling in love with someone only brings that blissful high all the poets talk about if they love you back. And if they keep secrets that jeopardize everyone and everything you hold dear, love doesn't even have the decency to die. It just transforms into abject misery.
That's what this ache in my chest is. Misery.
Because love, at its root, is hope. Hope for tomorrow. Hope for what could be. Hope that the someone you've entrusted your everything to will cradle and protect it. And hope? That shit is harder to kill than a dragon.
A slight hum tingles under my skin, and warmth flushes my cheeks as Tarn's power rises within me in answer to my heightened emotions.
At least I know I still have access to it. The Venon's poison didn't take it from me permanently. I'm still me.
Ah, Brennan shoots me a look I can't quite interpret. I wondered why he ran out of here like his ass was on fire. Trouble in paradise? I flat out glare at Brennan.
It's best if you don't know that, he chuckles. Hey, I'm asking my sister, not Cadet Sorengale. And you've been back in my life all of 5 minutes after faking your death for the last 6 years, so excuse me if I'm not going to suddenly open up about my love life. What about you? Are you married? Kids? Anyone you've basically lied to for the entirety of your relationship?
He flinches. No partner. No kids. Point made. Shoving his hands into the pockets of his riding leathers, he sighs. Look, I don't mean to be an ass, but details aren't anything you should know until you master keeping your shields up at all times against memory readers. I cringe at the thought of Dane touching me, seeing this, seeing Brennan. You're right. Don't tell me. Brennan's eyes narrow. You agreed entirely too easily. I shake my head and start for the door, calling over my shoulder. I need to leave before I get someone else killed. The more I see, the bigger of a liability I am to him, to all of this, and the longer we're here.
Gods, the others.
We have to go back, I tell Tern.
I know.
Brennan's jaw flexes as he catches up to me.
I'm not sure going back to Besgaeth is the best plan for you.
He pulls the door open anyway. No. But it's the best plan for you. I'm nervous as hell by the time Brennan and his orange dagger tail marb, as well as Taryn and I, reach Sigale, Zayden's enormous navy blue dagger tail, who stands under the shade of several even taller trees as though guarding something. Andarna. Sigale snarls at Brennan, baring her fangs and taking one threatening step in his direction, her claw fully extended in a series of sharp talons. Hey, that's my brother, I warn her, putting myself between them.
She's aware, Brennan mutters. Just doesn't like me. Never has.
Don't take it personally, I say right to her face. She doesn't like anyone but Zayden, and she only tolerates me, though I'm growing on her.
Like a tumor, she replies through the mental bond that connects the four of us.
Then her head swings, and I feel it. The shadowy, shimmering bond at the edge of my mind strengthens and pulls gently. In fact, Zayden's walking this way, I tell Brennan.
That's really fucking weird.
He folds his arms across his chest and looks behind us. Can you two always sense each other?
Kind of. It has to do with the bond between Sigale and Tern. I'd say you get used to it, but you don't.
I walk into the copse, and Sigale does me a solid favor and doesn't make me ask her to move, taking two steps to the right so I'm in between her and Tern, directly in front of...
What the fuck? That can't be.
No. Impossible.
Stay calm. She'll respond to your agitation and wake in a temper,
Tern warns. I stare at the sleeping dragon, who is almost twice the size she had been a few days ago, and try to get my thoughts to line up with what I'm seeing, what my heart already knows thanks to the bond between us. I shake my head, and my pulse begins to race.
Wasn't expecting that, Brennan says quietly. Ryerson left out some details when he reported in this morning. I've never seen such accelerated growth in a dragon before.
Her scales are black.
Yeah, saying it doesn't help make it feel any more real.
Dragons are only gold-feathered as hatchlings.
Tern's voice is uncharacteristically patient.
Accelerated growth. I whisper, repeating Brennan's words, then gasp. From the energy usage. We forced her to grow in Resin. She stopped time for too long. I forced her to grow. I can't seem to stop saying it.
It would have happened eventually, Silver One, if at a slower pace.
Is she full grown?
I can't take my eyes off her.
No. She's what you would call an adolescent.
We need to get her back to the Vale so she can enter the dreamless sleep and finish the growth process. I should warn you before she wakes up that this is a notoriously perilous age.
For her? Is she in danger?
My gaze swings to Taryn for the length of a terrorizing heartbeat.
No, just everyone around her. There's a reason adolescents don't bond either. They don't have the patience for humans. Or elders. Or logic, he grumbles.
So the same as humans?
A teenager.
Fabulous.
Except with teeth and eventually fire.
Her scales are so deeply black they glimmer almost purple. Iridescent, really. In the flickering sunlight that filters through the leaves above, the color of a dragon's scales is hereditary.
Wait a second, is she yours? I ask Taryn. I swear to the gods, if she's another secret you've kept from me, I'll—
I told you last year she is not our progeny.
Taryn answers, drawing up his head as if offended.
Black dragons are rare, but not unheard of.
And I happen to bond to two of them?
I counter, outright glaring at him.
Technically, she was gold when you bonded her. Not even she knew what color her scales would mature to. Only the eldest of our dens can sense a hatchling's pigment. In fact, two more black dragons have hatched in the last year, according to Coda.
Not helping.
I let Andarna's steady breathing assure me that she really is fine.
Giant, but
fine. I can still see her features, her slightly more rounded snout, the spiral twist carved into her curled horns. Even the way she tucks her wings in while sleeping is all her, only bigger.
If there's a morning star tail on her—
Tails are a matter of choice and need, he huffs indignantly. Don't they teach you anything?
You're not exactly a notoriously open species.
I'm sure Professor Kaori would salivate over knowing something like that. That shadowy bond wrapped around my mind strengthens.
Is she awake yet?
The deep timbre of Zayden's voice makes my pulse skip like always. I turn around to see him standing beside Brennan with Imogen, Garrick, Bodhi, and the others flanking him in the tall grass. My gaze catches on the cadets I don't know, two men and one woman. It's more than awkward that I went to war with them, and yet I've only seen them in passing in the halls. I couldn't even chance a guess at their names without feeling foolish.
It's not like Best Gaeth is made to foster friendships outside our squads, though.
Or relationships, for that matter.
I'll spend every single day of my life earning back your trust.
The memory of Zayden's words fills the space between us as we stare at each other.
We have to go back. I fold my arms across my chest, preparing for a fight. No matter what the Assembly says, if we don't go back, they'll kill every cadet with a rebellion relic.
Zayden nods, as though he'd already come to the same conclusion.
They'll see right through whatever lie you're going to tell, and they'll execute you, Violet,
Brennan retorts. According to our intelligence, General Sorengil already knows you're missing. She wasn't there on the dais when War Games orders were handed out. Her aide, Colonel Atos, was in charge of the games this year.
She didn't know.
Our mother won't let them kill me.
Say that again.
Brennan says softly. He tilts his head at me and looks so much like our father that I blink twice.
And this time, try to convince yourself that you mean it.
The general's loyalties are so crystal fucking clear that she might as well tattoo, "Yes, there are Venon, now go back to class," on her forehead.
That doesn't mean she'll kill me. I can make her believe our story. She'll want to if I'm the one telling it.
You don't think she'll kill you? She threw you into the Rider's Quadrant.
Fine. He has me there.
Yeah, she did, and guess what? I became a Rider. She may be a lot of things, but she won't let Colonel Atos or even Markham kill me without evidence.
You didn't see her when you didn't come home, Brennan. She was devastated. His hands curl into fists. I know the atrocious things she did in my name.
She wasn't there, one of the guys I don't know says, putting up his hands when the rest turn to glare at him.
He's shorter than the others, with a third squad flame section patch on his shoulder, light brown hair, and a pinkish round face that reminds me of the cherubs usually carved at the feet of statues of Amari. Seriously, Kieran? The brunette's second year lifts a hand to her forehead, shielding her fair skin from the sun and revealing a first squad flame section patch on her shoulder. Then lifts a pierced eyebrow at him. You're defending General Sorengale?
No, Aya, I'm not, but she wasn't there when orders were handed out.
He cuts off the sentence as two eyebrows slash down in warning.
And Atos was in charge of war games this year, he adds.
Kieran and Aya. I look to the lean guy who pushes his glasses up his pointed nose with a dark brown hand, standing next to Garrick's hulking build. I'm so sorry, but what is your name? It feels wrong to not know them all.
Mason, he replies with a quick smile. And if it makes you feel better, he glances at Brennan, I don't think your mom had anything to do with the war games this year either. Atos was pretty loud about his dad planning the whole thing.
Fucking Dane.
Thank you, I turn toward Brennan. I would bet my life that she didn't know what was waiting for us. You willing to bet all of ours, too? Aya asks, clearly not convinced, looking at Imogen for support and not getting any.
I vote we go, Garrick says. We have to risk it. They'll kill the others if we don't return, and we can't cut off the flow of weapons from Bezgaeth. Who agrees?
One by one, every hand rises but Zayden's and Brennan's. Zayden's jaw flexes, and two little lines appear between his brows. I know that expression. He's thinking. Scheming.
The second Atos puts hands on her, we lose Aracia and you lose your lives, Brennan says to him.
I'll train her to shut him out, Zayden responds. She already has the strongest shields of her year from learning to shut out Tarn. She only has to learn to keep them up at all times.
I don't argue. He has a direct link to my mind through the bond, which makes him the most logical choice to practice on.
And until she can shield out a memory reader, how are you going to keep his hands off her if you're not even there? Brennan challenges.
By hitting him in his biggest weakness. His pride.
Zayden's mouth curves into a ruthless smile.
If everyone is sure about going, we'll fly as soon as Andarna's awake.
We're sure.
Garrick answers for us, and I try to swallow the knot forming in my throat.
It's the right decision.
It could also get us killed. A rustling behind me catches my attention, and I turn to see Andarna rise, her golden eyes blinking slowly at me as she clumsily gains her newly taloned claws. The relief and joy curving my mouth are short-lived as she struggles to stand. Oh, gods. She reminds me of a newborn horse. Her wings and legs seem disproportionate to her body, and everything wobbles as she fights to keep upright. There's no way she's making the flight. I'm not even sure she can walk across the field.
Hey, I say, offering her a smile.
I can no longer stop time. She watches me carefully, her golden eyes judging me in a way that reminds me of presentation. I know. I nod and study the coppery streaks in her eyes.
Were those always there?
You are not disappointed.
You're alive. You kept us all alive. How could I be disappointed?
My chest tightens as I stare into her unblinking eyes, choosing my next words carefully.
We always knew that gift would only last as long as you were little, and you, my dearest, are no longer little.
A growl rumbles in her chest and my eyebrows shoot up. Are you feeling okay?
What the hell did I say to deserve that?
Adolescence, Taryn grumbles.
I am fine, she snaps, narrowing her eyes at Taryn.
We will leave now.
She flares her wings out, but only one fully extends, and she stumbles under the uneven weight careening forward. Zayden's shadows whip out from the trees and wrap around her chest, keeping her from face planting.
Well, shit.
I think we're going to have to make some modifications on that harness, Bodhi remarks as Andarna struggles to maintain her balance. That's going to take a few hours.
Can you fly her back to the Vale? I ask Tarn.
She's huge.
I've killed lesser riders for that kind of insult.
So dramatic. I can fly myself, Andarna argues, gaining her balance with the aid of Zayden's shadows.
It's just in case, I promise her, but she eyes me with deserved skepticism.
Get the harness done quickly, Zayden says. I have a plan, but we have to be back in 48 hours for this to work. And a day of that is needed for flight time.
What's in 48 hours? I ask.
Graduation.
An excerpt from Major Afendra's Guide to the Rider's Quadrant, unauthorized edition. There is no moment as rewarding, as stirring, as anticlimactic as a Rider's Quadrant graduation. It's the only time I've ever envied the infantry quadrant. Now those cadets know how to hold a ceremony. Chapter 3. The flight field at Besgaeth is still dark and appears deserted when we approach in the hour before sunrise. Hugging the landscape of the mountains, the riot doing what they can to stay out of sight.
That doesn't mean someone won't spot us landing,
Tarn reminds me, his wings beating steadily despite having flown the last 18 hours nearly straight through from Eratia. The window of time we have to get Andarna to the Vale without her being spotted is slim, and if we miss it, we'll put every hatchling in danger. I still don't understand why the Empyrean would ever agree to let dragons bond human riders, knowing they'd have to guard their own young not only against griffin flyers, but the very humans they're supposed to trust.
It's a delicate balance,
Tarn replies, banking left to follow the geography.
The first 6 riders were desperate to save their people when they approached the dens over 600 years ago. Those dragons formed the first Empyrean and bonded humans only to protect their hatching grounds from venom. Who were the bigger threat? We don't exactly have opposable thumbs for weaving wards or runes. Neither species has ever been entirely truthful, both using the other for their own reasons and nothing more.
It never occurred to me to hide anything from you.
Tarn does that weird thing that makes his neck appear boneless, swinging his head around to level slightly narrowed eyes at me for a heartbeat, before turning his attention back to the terrain.
I can do nothing to remedy the last 9 months besides answer your worthwhile questions now.
I know, I say quietly, wishing his words were enough to cut through the acrid taste of betrayal I can't seem to wash out of my mouth.
I'm going to have to let it go, I know that. Tarn was bound by his mating bond to Sigael, so at least he had a reason to keep everything he did from me, and it's not like I can blame Andarna for being a kid who followed his lead. Zayden is another matter entirely, though.
We're approaching. Get ready.
Guess we should have worked on rolling dismounts earlier in the year. I joke, gripping the pommel of my saddle tight as Tarn banks, my weight shifting right with him. My body is going to punish me for the hours in the saddle, but I wouldn't trade the feel of the summer wind against my face for anything.
A rolling dismount would tear you limb from limb on impact, he retorts.
You don't know that,
Andarna counters with what seems to be her new default form of conversation, telling Tarn he's wrong. A growl rumbles through Tarn's chest, vibrating the saddle beneath me and the harness that holds Andarna to his chest.
I'd watch it, I tell her, biting back a smile. He might get tired and drop you. His pride would never allow it.
Says the dragon who spent 20 minutes refusing to put on her harness, Taryn fires back.
All right, kids, let's not argue.
My muscles tighten, and the strap across my thighs digs in as Taryn dives, skimming the edge of Mount Besgaeth, bringing the fight field into view again.
Still deserted, Taryn notes.
You know rolling dismounts are a second-year maneuver. Not necessarily one I want to master, but that doesn't change the requirements.
One you won't be participating in,
Taryn grumbles.
Oh, maybe I'll take her if you won't,
Andarna chimes in, the last word ending in a dragon-sized yawn.
Maybe you should work on your own landings before taking our bonded on a flight to meet Malak.
This is going to be a long year. My stomach plummets as he drops into the box canyon known as the flight field.
I will drop Andarna in the Vale and then return and circle nearby.
You need rest.
There will be no rest if they decide to execute the eight of you on the dais.
The worry in his voice clogs my throat.
Call out if you even suspect it will not go your way.
It will, I assure him. Do me a favor and tell Sigale that I need to talk to Zayden on the walk-in.
Hold on tight.
The ground rushes to meet us, and I reach for the strap across my thighs, my fingers working the buckle as Taryn flares his wings to rapidly slow our descent. My momentum throws me forward as he touches down, and I force my ass back into the seat before yanking the belt off.
Get her out of here, I tell him, as I scramble for his shoulder, ignoring every muscle that dares to ache. Do not take unnecessary risk, he says, as I slide down his foreleg at the steep incline Andarna's position forces him to keep.
My feet slam into the ground and I stumble forward, catching my balance.
Love you too, I whisper, turning long enough to pat his leg and Andarna's before running forward to get the hell out of their way.
Taryn whips his head to the right where Sigale lands with brutal efficiency, her rider dismounting in the same manner.
The wing leader approaches.
He'll only be my wing leader for another few hours if we live through this. Zayden gives Taryn a wide berth to launch as he walks toward me. Sigale takes off next, followed by the rest of the riot. Guess we're on our own now. I lift my goggles to the top of my head and unzip my jacket. July at Besgaeth is muggy as hell, even this early.
You actually told Taryn to tell Sigale that you wanted to talk to me? Zayden asks as the sun's first rays color the tips of the mountains purple.
I did. I run my hands across my sheaths, checking to make sure my daggers weren't displaced during flight, as we walk out of the flight field slightly ahead of the others, heading toward the steps that will bypass the gauntlet and lead us back to the quadrant.
You remember that you can...
He taps the side of his head and walks backward in front of me. I clench my fists to keep from brushing a lock of dark, windblown hair off his forehead. A few days ago, I would have touched him without reservation. Hell, I would have threaded my fingers through his hair and pulled him in for a kiss. But that was then, and this is now. Talking that way feels a little too...
Gods, why is this so hard? It feels like every inch I sacrificed for in the last year when it comes to Zayden has been erased, putting us back at the starting line of an obstacle course I'm not sure either one of us ever chose to run.
I shrug.
Intimate. And we're not intimate?
He lifts his brows.
Because I can think of more than one occasion that you've been wrapped around.
I jolt forward and cover his mouth with my